Welcome to Amped Up. This is Ryan Knight. And thank you guys for being so patient as I'm transitioning now over to Anchor. I appreciate all your patience, as I know some of you have been tweeting me, where's the podcast? Where's the podcast? The podcast is back today. And we have a very special guest today. So please welcome Michaela Wilkes. She is a Democratic Socialist who is challenging Steny Hoyer in Maryland's 5th Congressional District primary, which is on this Tuesday, June 2nd. Michaela, welcome to Amped Up.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You know, you have such a compelling backstory. Do you want to start off by just sharing with our listeners a little bit about your journey to running for office and kind of what inspired you to run?
Yeah, so I wasn't always politically engaged because I didn't trust in the political process. I didn't trust politicians either. But when I was younger, my aunt died on September 11th. She was one of the victims inside of the Pentagon. And I had just began suffering from the grief of losing her. And so I started skipping school and running away from home and just hanging around with the wrong crowd. But instead of having someone to talk to or providing me with someone to talk to, I was met with open arms with the criminal justice system. For every one day I would miss of school, I could be sentenced to 10 days in jail. Even if I was just late to a class, I could face 10 days for that one instance.
Wow.
And at that young age, I went through that from about the ages of 14 to 17. And at that time, I had said that I wanted to grow up one day and work as a therapist because at that young age, I got to see how our criminal justice system was and how it was focused on incarceration instead of actually helping people to rehabilitate themselves. And then so we fast forward to 2014, which was a really pivotal moment in my life. It was the year I was pregnant with my daughter, Maddie. And I was diagnosed with deep vein thrombosis after having a pulmonary embolism. And my insurance company that I paid a premium to said they weren't going to cover the medications that I needed in order for me to live.
Wow.
Nevertheless, the medications that I needed to live cost almost $30,000 for a month's supply. And it was also the same year while I was pregnant with my daughter, I was incarcerated. Essentially because I was impoverished. I was working minimum wage job to minimum wage job, and I couldn't afford to pay traffic tickets. My license got suspended, and the area that I live in, you cannot get around if you don't have a car. And so I didn't have a choice but to go to work to make money so that I can pay the traffic tickets, and it landed me in jail. And that's when I started to see that these issues were systemic issues that needed systemic solutions.
Right. Right. You've kind of seen firsthand that the system isn't there to actually help people or to lift people up or to give them tools to better their life. The system is there to push people down.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to shift the conversation a little bit to kind of what is gripping the nation right now. I want to get your reaction to the murder of George Floyd by Minnesota police officer Derek Chauvin. You know, the protests, we've seen them. They've been going on for a few days now, and the pressure is mounting on Minnesota's DA Mike Freeman to arrest the officer that we all watched commit murder on television. The past few years, we've watched in horror as cop after cop has gotten away with murdering unarmed Black people. But this one feels different. It feels like we've finally reached the tipping point, and police officers who murder unarmed Black people will either be held accountable or there will be massive rebellion, as there should be, like we're seeing in Minneapolis right now. What are your thoughts? Oh, wow. I just got a breaking news alert. It looks like they're taking him into custody right now.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. I can't confirm that, but it just came up on my thing. So it looks like things are changing fast, as they have in our world.
Yes.
But what are your thoughts on all of this, on kind of where we are?
My thoughts are that it's heartbreaking. This is what the third person in the past two or so weeks, the second person that has died, and one person who could have had the same consequences from the video that went viral with the young woman, Amy Cooper, who had called the police and basically weaponized the police against a Black man and was probably hoping for the same outcome as George Floyd. And for me, it's just completely heartbreaking. And it just highlights what we need to do to fix our system. And the fact that we have to create legislation in order to just have equality for people of color, specifically Black people, to have the same amount of rights or the same amount of respect as any other person, it's just completely, it's amazing in a negative way.
Right, that we're here in 2020.
Yes, that we're here in 2020 and we need legislation to protect people of color.
And to protect Black lives and bodies from being murdered by the people who are supposed to, they sworn to protect, right? That aren't protecting communities.
Yes.
I can just confirm that the officer has been arrested. The prosecutor is set to speak momentarily here, but I can confirm that the officer who murdered George Floyd has been arrested. Fantastic. Fantastic news.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of bittersweet because I feel like all four of the officers should be arrested. They were all there. I also feel like being arrested is just the beginning. We have to see true justice.
Yep.
And so we'll see what happens.
But I also think we you know, there was a lot of talk yesterday and this morning before the arrest just happened right now, as we're here on the podcast, you know, a lot of talk about, you know, should they be rioting? Should there be violent protests? The answer is yes, because when nonviolence, we have been trying to have a nonviolent political revolution, for the last two major election cycles. And centrists and moderates have rejected that, right? They rejected Bernie's political revolution. So if you can't give the people a peaceful revolution, the people are, the only other way is violence. And we're seeing right now that the officer has been arrested because of the protests that we've had in the past 2 days. So the point of the story is, you know, of course we don't want there to be violence, but the corrupt and racist system that we have has given people no other choice but to rebel for their lives.
Yes. And then also people should remember the Boston Tea Party. That was also a political protest. Was also the form of a riot that our country was basically founded off of. You know, taxation without representation. You know, we can't pick and choose and be choosy of which protests we want to honor and which ones we don't.
Yeah, that's well said. I also think it's like if you allow these cops to keep doing this, it's not going to stop, right? Like until the cops get locked up, they're going to keep killing unarmed Black people. It's just the reality. So, you know, I really hope we have justice. You know, it's that old saying, you know, if there's no civility or peace without justice. And I feel like right now in the United States of America, there is no racial justice and there is no economic justice for working class people and for people of color. And we need to see that kind of justice. I also want to get your reaction. You know, when you hear these people complain about the looting, where is their outrage when the ruling class is literally looting from the working class? Over the past 30 years, we've seen a complete transfer of wealth. That's the nice way to call it. What we've really seen is the top 1% have gained $21 trillion in the last 30 years, while the bottom 50% of Americans have lost an astounding $900 billion in wealth. Why aren't people concerned about this looting from the rich just absolutely stepping on and stealing from the poor?
To be honest, it's because it's Black people doing it. And I'm just being transparent. Yeah. And that's what it
is. And I mean, do you think that we're going to start to see some justice? I mean, do you think that these riots are going to lead to the level of justice that we need to see in America for Black people and for poor people?
I think that it's a start. I think that it is a great start to where we need to be to get the justice that we need. But it's also going to take systemic solutions to handle this. Unfortunately, it has to go that far for us to actually pass legislation to get justice for people of color and to protect Black lives.
Yep. You know, and I want to shift the conversation and talk about your race with Steny Hoyer.
Yes.
And what it's like to take on the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. You know, we're at a moment in our history where business as usual, as you alluded to earlier, just isn't going to cut it. Our planet and our people need bold progress now. Yet still, even in the middle of this pandemic, and even in the middle of all this racial injustice, we are seeing corporate Democrats behave just like Republicans, put corporations over people, and resist the fundamental change that we need to heal this nation. There was a new poll out last week that 70% of the American electorate now support Medicare for All, yet Democratic leadership like Pelosi, Biden, and your primary challenger, Steny Hoyer, are still opposed to it. Why are corporate Democrats failing to meet this moment and refuse to support the change that we need, despite the fact that the overwhelming majority of the people want this change?
They're failing to meet the needs of that change because they are more afraid of their donors than the people that they represent. It's completely about the money that is able to be dumped into our political system. And that's why we have to have a revolution. That's why we have to vote for more progressives to let them know that their seats aren't safe, make them more afraid of their constituents than they are of the corporations who are giving them money.
Yeah, that's well said. Reverend William Barber said this week, I thought it was so profound. He said, Speaker Pelosi said, you don't expect me to change the healthcare system in the middle of a pandemic. And Reverend Barber responded, yes, we do. We changed slavery in the middle of the Civil War. We changed Jim Crow in the middle of Jim Crow. You change things when they need to be changed. It's clear to me that a big part of the problem is that Democratic voters keep reelecting these same politicians too, right?
Yes.
To the same seats year after year. And in some cases, like your opponent, Steny Hoyer, decade after decade. And I think it's made our party stagnant. And we're seeing that America is at a breaking point and the people who brought us here are not the ones to lead us out of here. Do you think it's time to elect a new generation of leaders to Congress who actually support the progressive policies that we need? And if so, what kind of leader will you be in Congress? Because I see you as one of those new generational leaders.
Yeah, I absolutely think that the new generation needs to step up and become representatives of people in our communities. Being in Congress is not supposed to be a lifetime appointment. It isn't an appointment, but they just get reelected over and over again. But I think now more than ever, it's really highlighting why we need progressive values. Like at this moment in this pandemic, we can't afford to have corporate politicians who are more afraid of their donors than us handling the pandemic, because they're not handling, the effect of the virus on the people. They're handling the economy, bailing out the big businesses, not giving folks hazard pay, and only giving them hazard pay should lobbyists be deemed essential. Bailing out the oil industry. I mean, this is what happens when you don't have progressives in office, when we have people that are more afraid of their donors than people. I would be the kind of leader that, and not even a leader because we have a republic, I would just be a representative of my constituency, a regular person that doesn't take corporate money, that will look out for the best of the people in my district, because I'm not fighting for the people in my district, I'm fighting with them. I'm a regular person, I'm an organizer, I'm an activist, and I plan to organize and activate while in Congress.
That's so well said. And sometimes I look back at, so it's like, who or what are these centrist Democrats even fighting for, right? Because I never hear them talking about policies that will transform people's lives. The only thing they talk about is how bad Trump is. And it's like, no shit, Sherlock, we can see that. Like, anyone with two eyes can see how bad Donald Trump is. Now, what are you going to do about it, right? They never address the root causes that led to Trump, or the policy prescriptions to move us past Trump. And I think that to me is kind of the big issue that we have right now in 2020. Centrist's entire theory of the case is that America's failing because of Trump. And I would say, no, it's failing because of the systemic problems that you've alluded to. It's failing because of systemic racism, because of our rigged economy, because of our corrupt political system, and because of our broken healthcare system. And so if we're just going to get rid of Trump and ignore the systemic rot and not have any systemic change, then yeah, what Joe Biden said in the campaign was true. Nothing will fundamentally change. It might have been the most honest thing he's ever said. So my question is, why are centrist Democrats like your opponent, Steny Hoyer, ignoring these systemic problems and only focusing on how bad Trump is, which obviously we can all tell? Like, why are they ignoring the systemic problems?
Because they are a part of the systemic problems, especially when we speak of Hoyer. Hoyer has signed and championed every single crime bill that has contributed to mass incarceration. He's voted for every single war. He's voted for every single defense budget. He hasn't supported universal health care that would help Black communities and to help with medical racism. He hasn't supported a Green New Deal or even put it on the floor for a vote, which would help with environmental racism. And so we can't expect people who are a part of the problem to solve the problem. And so, of course, they're going to pivot to Trump because their record speaks for itself. And should their constituency see that they are a part of that problem, I mean, that would create more problems for them. It's all about being reelected. And so, and then on the other half, I really don't understand why they pivot to Trump and blame everything on him when their track records doesn't even prove that they've been fighting against Trump. I mean, Steny Hoyer said that he was going to wait for Donald Trump to create a plan for more affordable health care. Like, what?
Yeah. So basically he's never going to give a plan for affordable health care because we know Trump isn't, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, and they voted for his military budget, right? You're absolutely right. They keep voting for Congress and these corporate Democrats basically keep voting for everything that the Republicans are voting for.
Yes.
And the policies like that you're talking about, universal health care, a Green New Deal, they're supported by not just Democrats. They're supported by independents in the overwhelming majority of the electorate. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we don't even, when I hear Democrats say that, you know, oh, we need to save our democracy. I'm like, wait, who are you trying to save the democracy for? The plutocrats? Are you trying to save it for the billionaires? Are you trying to save it for the giant corporations? Because this is not a democracy, right? Democracy means that there's representation for the majority of the people, right? This democracy is not working for the majority of the people because it's not a democracy. We live in a plutocracy. Our government is controlled by the 1%, right? That uses their money to buy these campaign officials like Steny Hoyer to rule over the 99%. And that's not democracy. So when I hear people say they're trying to save democracy, like, no, we need to build a democracy in America because we don't have one.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
What specific policies do you see that we need besides, you know, Medicare for All and a Green New Deal that will really give us that systemic change that we need? To not just defeat Trump, but to kind of defeat Trumpism and defeat the right wing ideology that's in America right now.
Well, for one, one thing we need to do is tackle affordable housing and also criminal justice reform, public education, higher education, because the criminal justice system is only a part of the problem, but it's everything that leads up to it. It's the lack of access to quality schooling. It is the lack of access to actual health care. It is not having jobs within the community. And so we have to support legislation that will enact those changes. A Green New Deal will create 20 million jobs in the country with also on-the-job training, giving everyone a tuition-free college and trade school, providing affordable housing for people all across the country, providing a better public education system so that folks can have quality schooling no matter what your zip code is. These are the things that we have to do systemically to end the systemic oppression and racism and all the other problems that we have towards marginalized communities in our political system.
That's really well said. Because you are running as a Democratic Socialist, which I think is awesome. I myself am a Democratic Socialist, but I hear so much misinformation, you know, in corporate media and just so much fear mongering about, you know, what is Democratic Socialism? I think it's very misunderstood. So what is it Democratic Socialism mean to you?
For me, being a Democratic Socialist is believing that our government should work for us. It is about having, it's no different than having public libraries or fire departments. You know, it's making sure that everyone has what they need as basic human rights, healthcare, housing, education. It's ensuring that our system is working to invest our tax dollars into us instead of into endless wars, instead of into bailouts for corporations, but that our government finally works for our communities.
That's well said. You know, one thing that I hear a ton of pushback from the right is, You know, oh, you want bigger government. And, you know, for me, it's not about bigger government or smaller government. It is about who our government really works for. And right now, like you said, we have a government that works for the plutocrats, the corporations, and the top 1%. And we desperately need a government that works for the people, the small businesses, and the 99%. You know, it's that simple to me. It's not like this big complicated thing. I think, you know, you can even look at what's happening right now during this pandemic. You know, I don't know how anyone can defend an economic system where a plutocrat like Jeff Bezos makes $40 billion during the pandemic while 40 million Americans lose their jobs. It couldn't be more obvious to me that it's time to move to a more just and sustainable economic system. Yet it seems like most of the American people are resistant or even afraid of democratic socialism. Why do you think that is? And what can we do to bring more people along and kind of break through that fear?
I think that we can just explain to people, because it's all about educating the public on what we want from our policies. And I've seen that on the campaign trail, folks who, you know, they watch the news and they hear, you know, Medicare for all will take away your choices. But, you know, when I was out canvassing in the community and speaking with people, and I would explain to them, you know, how would you like to have, you know, a healthcare system where you don't have to pay any out of pocket costs and you can see whatever doctor you want to see and you can't be denied life saving care or medications ever again. And they are completely 100% on board. And then I say, well, yeah, that's Medicare for all. We have to get rid of the false narrative that the mainstream media and the corporate politicians are telling folks, because I can't tell you how many people are so confused about Medicare for all. And it's so simple, but they do that on purpose.
Oh, absolutely. It's intentional, right? Because when you tell, like you said, when you tell people no deductibles, no copays, no premiums, and you can actually get treatment, like they, you know, they use this propaganda about choice. Where's the choice when you're being rejected from your doctor and you can't get cancer treatment because a giant insurance corporation just rejected your claim because all they care about is their profits? There's no choice in that, right? Like, so they use all these words to kind of, you know, twist the whole narrative around to prevent justice for poor and marginalized and for people of color is really what it comes down to. What have you learned about yourself and what have you learned about America in running for office?
What I've learned about myself is that I'm more resilient than I ever thought that I could be. I'm stronger than I ever thought that I thought I was. Running for Congress has been the hardest job I have ever had. It's so hard to get, you know, people to get behind you, to get out in the community and to start a movement. And that's what this campaign has done. I haven't done it by myself, but that's what this campaign has done. We've started a movement and it's taught me that, you know, we as people have the ability to do that. We can organize as a community and fight for what we want, even to the extent of voting out the majority leader of the House. I will say, what it's taught me about what it has taught me about like politics and everything else in general, it's just that it's a whole lot deeper. It's a whole lot deeper than what we ever could imagine it is. It's so much bigger than what you see in the news. It's so much bigger than, you know, what you see in a candidate's FEC filings of their corporate donors. It is an entire machine. And we hear about it being a machine, but actually being in the process and actually seeing the machine work against you is a whole other type of thing.
Yep. No, I know it's a machine because they canceled my podcast because they didn't like the things I was saying and they didn't like that I was supporting Democrats that are challenging and primarying, you know, corporate Democrats. They think that, you know, Trump is just so bad that everyone needs to get in line behind the, you know, the corporate candidates. And that's it. If you don't toe the party line, then, you know, we're done with you. And it's ridiculous because, you know, what we're fighting for is decency, is justice, is compassion, is a society where, you know, people can work hard and get ahead. I feel in many ways like the American dream that you're taught when you're a kid is dead or is an illusion because you're seeing folks work so hard. It's not that the folks aren't working hard. It's just that the system is rigged against the people who are working so hard. And it's rigged against them by these powerful giant corporations who've bought off our government. And it's, you know, for me, I've learned the problem is so much bigger than Trump. I wish it was like, hey, we lived in a fairy tale and we just get rid of Trump and everything will magically be better. But if you just get rid of him and you don't heal the systemic rot that created Trump and you don't fight for systemic change, it's going to be just the same, you know? And that's my biggest fear, is that so many Democrats think, oh, we'll just get rid of Trump and it's all going to be good again. And that's just not true. It never really was good for so many Americans. There is no normal for so millions of Americans to go back to.
Yeah, I completely agree. There is no normal to go back. And I'm not in favor of going back. I want to go forward and I want to progress.
You know, I think you have to, we're nearing our time here. What parting thoughts here? What gives you hope? You know, because there is a lot of desperation right now, and we are in such a pivotal turning point in our nation's history. And I think a lot of people are feeling, you know, hopeless, and they're feeling a lot of despair. What are things that give you hope, and what has kind of fueled you to step up and do something as brave and bold and courageous as challenging someone as powerful as Steny Hoyer?
What gives me hope is the opportunity for change. I mean, regardless of the outcome of our primary, we have started a movement, and, you know, a congressional campaign can end, but a movement can't. And so the movement gives me hope. You know, being able to organize and seeing people in the community stand up for once. I know in our district, this is the first time a movement like this has ever been introduced in our district. And so it's really giving me hope that in our district, we are going to continue to deserve better. And it's going to put a highlight on our current political system. And it's going to cause more people to be politically active. And that's what gives me hope.
How can our listeners join in your movement? How can they, you know, where do they go to chip in 10, 15 bucks to help, you know, to help you get over the finish line strong here?
Yeah, so our primary is this Tuesday coming up on June 2nd, and we absolutely can use contributions, especially all the way up until the last minute. Hoyer has spent almost over $500,000 just in the past couple of weeks to campaign against us. And so we need every single dollar we can. And we also need folks to phone bank with us. We phone bank every single day. We have a mega bank today at 5 p.m. You can go and sign up for it on our website. And so if you would like to make a contribution or phone bank with us today up until the primary, you can go to Michaela2020.com. If you would like to donate, you hit the donate tab. If you would like to volunteer, click the volunteer tab and sign up for a phone banking shift.
Awesome. Well, Michaela, I really appreciate you taking the time, and sorry, we had a little technical difficulties getting you online here today. I'm learning this new software myself and learning how to do all this myself, but I just thank you for coming on the show today, and thank you for your courage, and thank you for getting in this fight, and thank you for everything you're doing to make sure that we have a democracy in America, and to make sure that people have representation and have leaders who actually fight for them and not, you know, the billionaire class and these giant corporations. I really just, you inspire me.
Yeah, so thank you so much as well for giving candidates like me a platform to speak on.
Oh, you bet. Well, go get them. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Okay? Bye.
All right. Thanks, Michaela. Bye-bye.